following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone, where local investigators as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.fm is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And our guest today is Mr. Jan Harzen. Mr. Harzen is the executive director of the Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON. He retired from IBM after 37 years in the information technology business. Jan's interest in UFOs began at the age of 8 when he and his brother were visited by a UFO, which was no more than 30 feet from them. With no visible means of propulsion other than making a humming noise before shooting off over the horizon. As one can imagine, this event profoundly changed their lives. He has since dedicated his life to finding the answers to the technology behind these craft. Believing that a breakthrough would revolutionize transportation and energy on our planet, Jan attended UCLA School of Engineering and received his BS in Nuclear Engineering. After college, he was hired by IBM, thinking that only a company of IBM's stature and funding in basic research could solve this problem. 37 years later, Jan is still looking for the answers to how all this works. Jan has been interviewed on many TV and radio shows, as well as documentaries on the UFO subject, and he was the guest on this show back in March of 2014 with the latest revelations in ufology. I felt it apropos to ask him to join us again with his inside input on the matter. So welcome back, Mr. Harzen.
Yeah, thank you, David. It's great to be here. Appreciate you inviting me.
Oh, I appreciate you coming on. And for those of our listeners unfamiliar with MUFON, which after 13 years, I don't think so, but maybe they're just tuning in, tell us about the organization.
Oh, sure. I'd be glad to. In fact, we're celebrating our 50th anniversary this year. We were founded May 31st of 1969 by six gentlemen in the Midwest. And originally, it was called the Midwest UFO Network. And after many other states and countries decided they wanted to join, the name was changed to the Mutual UFO Network. We are a 501c3 nonprofit, and we operate in 43 countries in all 50 states. So our mission statement is the scientific study of UFOs for the benefit of humanity, and we basically have three major goals for the organization. The first is to investigate UFO sightings and collect that information into a database, which is called CMS. The second is to promote research into the UFO subject, and we use the word promote because basically it requires funding to do research, and we don't have all the funding there is, but we think that if universities and private corporations and other folks got involved in this, there'd be quite a bit of incredible breakthroughs for the whole mankind on this planet. Right. And the third is to educate the public. So we basically make the findings that we have and the reports that come to us available to the public on our website, MUFON.com. So that in a nutshell is MUFON. It's a 50-year organization. It's been studying this phenomenon for all that time and investigating it and looking deeply into it. And we know that UFOs are real, and they are advanced technology that have been in our skies for quite some time that are being observed by ordinary people, and now our military is starting to come forward with
really
information. So
really
exciting topic.
So there's a big symposium, MUFON symposium, coming up soon. When and where will that be, and who's speaking?
The each year we do a symposium. This will be our 50th symposium. The first one was in 1970, and it's going to be at the Hotel Irvine in Irvine, California. That's in Southern California. It'll be July 26th, 7th, and 8th, and you can go to our website, MUFON.com, or MUFONsymposium.com, and get all the details on all the speakers we have and everything that's going to be happening there. It's going to be quite an exciting time. We'll be celebrating Stanton Friedman's life, who was a longtime MUFON member and investigator,
right,
who passed away recently this year, as well as John Schussler, who was one of the founding members of MUFON, who will be our keynote speaker on Friday night. So I encourage everybody to come out and join. If they can't join in person, there's a live broadcast of the event, which you can get off the website as well. So be there live, or be there live at the end of your computer.
How do people get a hold of that on their computer?
Well, basically go to MUFONsymposium.com or MUFON.com and click on the links to the symposium. And then there's a Get a Live Stream button right at the top, and you can click on that and order the live stream up. I think it's $79. That gives you a year of MUFON television free, as well as all of the perks of membership for MUFON. So I encourage people to look at that, and we've got almost, I think, 12 years now of symposiums archived that you can watch, as well as up to 500 other pieces of UFO content that are part of the MUFON TV offering. So if people can't drive out here, fly out here, or you know, take the train out here, they should definitely be on the MUFON TV watching it live, and it'll be archived as well, so if you miss something, you can watch it later.
Yeah.
You have a whole year to do that.
Yeah, and you can also order the speaker's presentations after the fact, can't you?
Well, we have a proceedings. We publish a proceedings, which is the speaker documentation of the event and everyone who's there. So, yeah, you can purchase that. I think it's $35. If you buy it ahead of time, it's $25. And that's if you buy a ticket to the symposium itself, you're able to order that right off the Internet, and we'll ship that to you.
Who's speaking this year? We have a list.
Oh my gosh, we've got some great people who are coming. Obviously, John Schussler, who is one of our founding members, and he was the executive director of MUFON from 2000 until 2006. He'll be our keynote, and he'll be sharing some of the things that have happened over the 50-year history with MUFON. He's a great researcher, very gentleman. Worked for McDonnell Douglas and Boeing after they were bought by Boeing. James Peniston will be there. He's a former Air Force gentleman who is retired now. He was at Rendlesham Forest when the Rendlesham Forest event happened, and actually was one of the folks who was out on the security detail trying to track down what exactly was going on in the woods. He's one of the few people I know who's actually touched a UFO, and he's going to talk about that and what happened to him when he did that. Then we got Dr. Irina Scott. She's going to be talking about a case. She was a MUFON board member for years back in the 90s, and she is a former DIA, but also a researcher, and is going to be talking about a case that happened with her and her sister that included not only UFOs, but poltergeists and ancestors and a whole lot more. So it sounds like a very, very interesting paranormal UFO case that people might want to hear about. And then kind of exciting to me is we've got Paul Hynek, who is the son of J. Allen Hynek, the founder of UFOs, and former Project Blue Book scientific advisor, and he'll be talking about kind of his growing up, what it was like to grow up in the Hynek household, and some of the things he saw. I mean, he had quite a few military people traipsing through the house as a teenager, and intelligence folks, because of the job his father held. But as you know, J. Allen, after a year or two of studying this phenomenon, created his own study group called CUFOS, Center for UFO Studies, which is still working up in Chicago area, and he amassed quite a bit of information on the topic, and he was convinced it was something worth studying, and I'm sure that put him at odds with the Air Force, who was trying to tamp this thing down and quiet the noise around the whole UFO subject.
All right. Well,
I keep going. We've got A.J. Gavard from Brazil. He's our national director for Brazil. He's going to be talking about the what's going on in South America and Brazil specifically. We've got Klaus Svahn from Sweden. He runs the he's the chairman of the AFU. I think that's the Academy of 40 and objects or something. But it's basically they collect all information on all sorts of paranormal subjects. And they have like 11 warehouses stuffed with stuff. So everything from ghosts to UFOs to cryptoids. It's just Archives for the Unexplained, AFU, in Sweden. He's the chairman of the Archives for the Unexplained, AFU. So he's going to talk about some of the stuff they've got in their files. And very, very impressive. They do this as a nonprofit. And people volunteer their time to come and scan documents. They've got most of the publications from the UFO field and all the other Fortean-type publications where they have scanned them all and have made them archival, available for archive purposes. Quite a nice gentleman. I met him a few years ago down in Brazil when he was speaking at the A.J. Gavard's conference down there. We were both speakers and got a chance to spend some time with him. Just an outstanding gentleman. People will really enjoy meeting him and hearing his talk.
Really?
And then we've got Dr. Michael Masters. Here's another Ph.D. Who is a professor at Montana State, but he has his Ph.D. degree out of Ohio State, and he just wrote a book called Identified Flying Objects, and he's got a theory based on evolution of our species and technology and physics that perhaps these folks are people from the future who are coming back doing time travel. In other words, it's us coming back in time, and he's going to lay out his thought process behind that, and it's a very nice scientific study he's done. He calls it a multidisciplinary scientific approach to the UFO phenomenon, and it's just something to kind of stretch your mind and get us thinking outside the box.
Right.
Obviously, most of us think these things are extraterrestrial. That's my number one hunch. They're just more intelligent beings, 1,000 years, maybe 1,000,000 years more advanced than us, coming from other places in our galaxy or another galaxy, visiting Earth. But there's a whole lot of other theories about what these could be, and one of them, of course, is that they're time travelers who are coming back and interacting with beings here on this planet. So we'll have to see. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to be done. There's nothing that's mutually exclusive. It could be a whole lot of things going on simultaneously.
Right.
But Michael has put this nice book together, and he's going to come talk. And I've had a chance to chat with him. He's a very nice gentleman and a scholar. And so we're going to have some scientists there talking as well about UFOs.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That sounds like quite an event. And where can people go again to check this out and maybe get last-minute airplane ticket?
Yeah, sure. It's at the MUFONsymposium.com. Or if that's too hard to remember, just go to MUFON.com, and we have a banner at the top. Click on that. Or on the right-hand side, there's a little box talking about the symposium. Click on that. It'll take you right to the homepage, MUFONsymposium.com, and you've got everything laid out there. You can look at the speakers. You can look at the schedule. You can check out the hotel. We have a special rate on the hotel. It's a beautiful 5-star hotel. I think it's $129 a night, I believe, for our special rate.
Mm-hmm.
You can get other hotels a little cheaper in the area, but not much cheaper. For the step up in quality and pricing, it's certainly worth the extra $20 a night. I can say that.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, what is it, 3 nights or 4 nights?
It's going to be 3 nights. Well, Friday night and Saturday night, basically. I mean, if you are flying in, you might want to stay over Sunday night, too, so you can see the last lecture.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps 3 nights. And then you can buy a 1-day, 2-day, or 3-day ticket. If you buy the full symposium, that comes for all the speakers. I think there's 12 in total, including the Friday night banquet. So that banquet's included in that ticket price for food. And then we'll be doing some recognition and awards and a little talk on MUFON briefly and celebrating our 50th anniversary. And then we're going to have John Schuessler speaking. So Friday night in and of itself is a whole event. And then on Saturday night, we're going to have Paul Kimball, who's a cousin or nephew, I guess, of Stanton Friedman, come and celebrate his life. We're going to do a little memoriam, if you will, for Stanton Friedman, beginning at 9 to 11. That's actually free to the public. And people will get a chance to see Flying Saucers, the Stanton Friedman story, which was done by Paul, on Stanton's life. And then we'll have an open mic, and people can share their musings about Stanton and how they came to know him and things about him. So it should be fun. I mean, we're going to have a full schedule all 3 days. I mean, you're going to be jam-packed.
Sounds
great.
We'll
also have We'll also have a art show, which hasn't actually been advertised at all, but a UFO art show, and a movie schedule. We'll have we do this every year, which we have the movies that we show during this thing. So if you've seen a speaker or maybe you want to step out and take a little break, you can go sit in the movie theater and watch a show on one of the videos that's going to be shown from different top cases and things that have been filmed over the years.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a vendor area, which is going to have a lot of super vendors. So it's going to be a full time. The vendor area, the movies are all free to the public, so you can come and just hang out if you want. If you want to go into the main ballroom and hear the speakers talk or go to one of the special events, we have a list and we can talk about those in a minute. You'd pay to go do that. But I know people who come and just spend the whole time there just talking to people. I mean, that's
sure.
The best things about going to one symposium like this is you get some very intelligent people there attending as well as speaking, and you have an opportunity to rub shoulders with them and ask questions and share information. So that's the number one reason why I go to these symposiums, is because it's an opportunity to talk to like-minded people and hear what the public has to say and learn about some new researchers and what they're up to.
Really? These are speakers that I would just love to get on my radio show. You know that?
You should. Yeah. Reach out to them. Yeah.
I got to do that.
Happy to provide you the contacts.
Right. Well, I appreciate it. So that sounds great. And those latest revelations in ufology, to which I referred in the introduction there, allude to Luis Elizondo and the To the Stars Academy of Arts and Sciences. Tell our listeners how that all came into being.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. But before we do that, I just want to close out the symposium by saying we have five special events, actually six. We have a Apollo 11 exhibit, which is at the Nixon Presidential Library, about 20 minutes from the hotel, which we're going to have a tour bus to for those who want to go celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Apollo moon landing. We've got a drone training class for those who might want to get their FAA certification for being a drone pilot. I understand there's a way to turn that into a business for yourself. That's going to be offered. We've got experiencer workshops both Saturday and Sunday morning with Kathy Marden and George Medich, who run our experiencer research team. Kathleen, of course, is the niece of Betty from Betty and Barney Hill, which is the 1961 case in New Hampshire where they were abducted, and that was the first publicly reported abduction case in American history.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be running experiencer workshops for those who either believe they've been abducted or would like to learn more about that whole phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
Experience or phenomenon. And we have an FI training all day Thursday. If you want to become a MUFON field investigator, sign up for the FI training. That's going to be a class in and of itself on Thursday before the symposium even starts. And then Lynn Katai is going to be here. She's, of course, from the Phoenix Lights, and she's very famous around the world. And she'll be running a youth program on Sunday. We're trying to, for $10, we're giving a youth program so parents can bring their teenage sons and daughters and have them have a program on this whole UFO subject to kind of immerse them in it for the first time. We're trying to really reach out to our young people and get them involved in this and get them knowledgeable about the history that's kind of been hidden from them for the past 50 to 70 years. So.
Really, yeah.
And then last but not least, we have speaker panels. So we've got five or six speakers on each day, Saturday and Sunday, I think for $39. We'll have a lunchtime panel. So there's a lot of things to do besides just sitting in the main stage and listening to all the speakers. I mean, there's lots of other events happening on and about you, starting Thursday, also on Friday, and then again on Saturday and Sunday. So check it out. Go to MUFONsymposium.com or MUFON.com and click on the symposium banner at the top, and you can read all about it. And I hope to hear you, have you be there and or join us by live stream.
That sounds great.
Now, your question, it's going to be great.
Before we get into that now, I need to take a moment just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, and you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with Mr. Jan Harzen. He's the international director for International MUFON, or Mutual UFO Network. And, yes, now you were going to say, sir.
You'd ask me the question about the TTSA thing. Yeah, I think we've really reached a watershed moment in ufology and the subject of UFOs across the planet with the announcement back in October actually went all the way back to May of last year. If you recall, there was a 60 Minutes show in 2017, in May of 2017, so I guess it might be 2 years ago now, where they interviewed Robert Bigelow, and as part of the show, the 60 Minutes interviewer asked him the question about, you know, UFOs and his involvement with it, and he quite strikingly said on air that, yes, these UFOs are real, and aliens are present on the planet. So I think that took her back a little bit, because she asked him the question of, do you feel like you shouldn't be saying that because people think you're crazy? And his answer was, I don't care what people think. I know what's true, and that's what's true. So I about fell out of my chair when that happened, because, I mean, how many billionaires, you don't see Elon Musk sitting up and saying aliens are real here, or you don't see some of these other guys.
Right.
But Robert Bigelow, of course, has spent more than any other private individual on this subject in terms of trying to understand it and investigate it. And for having him go on 60 Minutes, which is a major, major, major television program, and make that admission back in May of 2017, it was like a bombshell. And interestingly enough, nothing happened. There was like there was no follow-up by the press or anything. So I was kind of like, wow, that's weird. But it was exciting. And then in October, it was followed up by TTSA, Tom DeLonge, the former lead guitarist for Blink 182, a rock band, collected a gaggle of insiders with the U.S. government based on his connections that he made at the Lockheed Skunk Works and with various generals in the military and the intelligence community. And he announced the formation of TTSA, To the Stars Academy of Arts and Sciences, which is basically a company designed to basically get word out on UFOs through an entertainment form of the company. They've got a science piece of the company, which is headed up by, I believe, Hal Puthoff, looking at the theoretical physics of how these things actually operate in our airspace, how do they get here, and then also technology group headed up by Stephen Justice, which is, I think, looking at trying to turn some of this technology into product that could be put to use on the planet for everybody's use. So kind of an exciting time. And you can go watch their Facebook Live. You can go to TTSA.com, I believe, or To the Stars Academy, .com, and you can play the video that was done back in October of 2017 where they announced the whole program. Mm-hmm. And then things kind of went dark for about 6 weeks, and then all of a sudden, bam, the New York Times comes out with a December 16th article, 2017, on the Pentagon's secret UFO program. And that was a real bombshell for everybody.
Really?
Because it was the first time that our government and our military had admitted that they had any interest in the subject whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Before that time, as you know, Dave, the folks were basically told there was nothing there. It's kind of like the Star Wars scene where there's nothing here. You know, there's
right.
Nothing here.
So. Move along. There's nothing here. Nothing to see here.
Yeah, shuffle along, please. We don't have anything here to show you. But quite frankly, there was quite a bit to show, and as part of his running that program, Luis Elizondo, before he stepped out, got three videos declassified and put into the public domain, and those videos showed up, at least one of them showed up on the front page of the New York Times, and then, of course, it was followed up by a blitzkrieg of media frenzy between CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, you name it, everybody and their brother had a program on with either Chris Mellone, Tom DeLonge, and or Lou Elizondo talking about these videos.
Mm-hmm.
And their new TV show with A&E, which is being played on the History Channel Friday nights, called Unidentified, is basically a follow-up to all that, which is coming out now. So what we know now from government insiders who were very high up in our government, Chris Mellone was a former Deputy Secretary of Defense under both Clinton and Bush, have come forward to say that not only are these UFOs real, but they represent advanced technology, which is not from this Earth. It's nobody here on this planet that we know of doing this. So it's somebody else from someplace else. They aren't going to the who, where, and when, but they're looking at the what and the how. What are these objects and how do they work? That's been the primary focus for ATIP, which was the program that Lou was part of for 10 years, which continues to this day, despite what the Pentagon would like people to believe. And I think TTSA is trying to be kind of a civilian, if you will, because they've, I think, offered stock in their company, and they're trying to be more of a public benefit corporation. Not trying to be, they're a public benefit corporation. And they're trying to get this technology and stuff out to the public and make it understood and then put it to our use. I like peaceful use for all of us, so mm-hmm. I'm 100% behind that effort.
Well, with Chris Mellon and the Pentagon coming out, I mean, you know, somebody in the entertainment business can say, yeah, this is real, but with actual radar footage and the Pentagon saying, yeah, it's real, and we've been studying this phenomenon ever since we said we were not studying this phenomenon, wouldn't that qualify as disclosure?
Oh, I consider it disclosure. I think we've had disclosure. Unfortunately, we're dealing with the Kubler-Ross grieving model, which is that the first thing you do when something rocks your paradigm or rocks your world is you deny it. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing a whole bunch of denials come up now from people who don't want to believe it's real. Mm-hmm. It threatens their livelihood. It threatens what they've been doing for 50 years in their careers. So we're going to get some pushback, and that's fine. I mean, not everybody gets through but if you go through the grieving process from denial, the next step is anger when you realize, oh, my gosh, this is real. And it was originally developed for death, but it also has anything to do with, you know, divorce, any kind of financial trauma you might suffer. Any major change in your life, you move through the Kubler-Ross five stages. So it's a good thing for people to understand, because the main thing is you want to move through the five stages. If you get stuck in any one stage, that's not good for you. Mm-mm. But the first stage is denial, and the last stage is acceptance. So the people in the UFO field who've been doing this for 50 years or longer, we're all at the far right end. We're at acceptance. You know, we've known these things are real. We know that this stuff is not from here. We know it's some other intelligence interacting with us. So that's not a biggie for us. We'd just like to know more about what the government knows. But for those at the front end, it's that, and then, of course, they move to anger, denial to anger, and then they shift down the curve eventually to acceptance. So I think we're going to go through that curve, and different parts of the population will be at different places on the curve. I'm starting to see more and more people accepting the fact that they're real. Probably, 60-80% of the population is like, no big deal. We've known this for years. Why is everybody so excited about it?
Right.
But you still got that laggard 10 to 20% that's dragging its feet and screaming and gnashing their teeth because they don't want it to be real.
No, they'd have to change their whole paradigm, their whole worldview, you know?
And exactly.
How does this affect...
That's what's going on.
How does this affect my religion and what science has told us thus far? And let's not forget that the government has, or the military, the Pentagon, whomever, the powers that be, has told us we cannot confirm nor deny. And I always say, you ask them if they got anything on Santa Claus or the Easter Bunny, they'll just chuckle and say, of course we don't. But what about UFOs and aliens? We cannot confirm nor deny. What's the difference here? You're saying they're both the same? No.
Right, right. Yeah.
We cannot confirm because it's a secret. We cannot deny because it's the truth.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they aren't going to tell us anything because a lot of this stuff is still classified. I mean, if you think about it, Dave, what's the dirty little secret that's kept this in such a dark place for so many years and under wraps and to the point where the intelligence community is doing everything it can to undermine anybody who comes out with credible evidence and or destroy their reputation? It's called national security, and the craft work on a principle called space-time manipulation or space-time engineering. Our universe is made up of STEM, space-time, energy, and matter. Well, many years ago, Einstein figured out that and wrote the equation for this, the general theory of relativity, but that energy and matter could be moved between, and that's how we got the atomic bomb, was converting matter into energy. Mm. Same way you can move between space and time. And so if you had the ability to manipulate space and time to your liking, it would allow you to literally put a nuclear device on the front steps of the White House, and blow it up before anyone even knew it was there. So that's not something you'd want in your adversary's hands.
No.
And hence the need for all these years to keep it covered up and to do whatever they could to basically make sure that it didn't leak out. And I think some of those forces are still there today, based on some of the little press things I read. of the Pentagon trying to step away from this and try to not talk about it. I mean, the Pentagon's not one to talk about what they know. I mean, their job is to protect us, and they take it very seriously. Mm-hmm. And so you don't protect people by talking about what you can do and what you can't do. You basically just keep your mouth shut and you protect people. So I don't think they're doing anything that they shouldn't be doing, but for those who are angry about the fact why it's been kept secret all these years, it's very simple. It was a national security issue, and it had to do with the manipulation of space-time. It's as simple as that.
And it's because of what they can't do. We can't protect you from this.
Correct.
You know, we can't protect the abductees from being abducted, you know.
Correct.
Fortunately, they bring them back as a rule, so, you know.
Both cases we see that happen, yeah.
Cases, yeah. What do you think about time travel? I mean, do you think some of them... I've heard stories, some accounts of people being returned to the wrong time, and then they go back out into space and come back to the right time. Are these, you know, fantasies?
Now going back, you're talking about space manipulation of space and time. So if you can manipulate space and time, you can time travel.
Mm-hmm.
So they're able to stop time in our coordinates, our reference system, mm-hmm. and continue on. It's not like Time Bandits. I remember that show or movie where they were able to stop time and then run around and do things and then restart time.
Right, with the watch?
Yeah.
I love that one.
It was, it's maybe saying crazy to us, but if you can manipulate space and time, you can do that. I mean, that's a very doable thing. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it won't be too long before we know how to do it. Engineer it into being. We understand the equations now. I had a conversation with Hal Puthoff, and basically, you know, Jan, we understand the equations and what the errors are, and we now know how to do what these things are doing. But engineering it into being is a huge matter. I mean, taking it from an equation on a piece of paper and building something that does it is a quite different thing. So I think that's probably one of the directions that I won't say TTSA is going, but I think they'd like to figure out how to do that. But I think there's definitely other people and other aerospace companies who would be interested in figuring out how to do that. I mean, if you could transport people across the planet in the blink of an eye, I think people would love that. Who wants to spend 18 hours on an airplane going to Asia?
Really?
Yeah.
Or can we get all of our atoms and together in the same back in place?
It's not we can
like,
only hope.
Not like the fly,
Yeah.
It'd be part fly. Anyway. Yeah, the Tic Tac video. Now, tell me about you've seen the Tic Tac. Everybody's seen the Tic Tac video.
Yeah.
Are those clouds beneath the object? Or is that ocean?
That's good. I honestly haven't analyzed it that closely to know, but I know that I've heard people say it's clouds. Now, there are actually three different videos. Some were from 2004. One of them was from 2004,
mm-hmm.
and then the other two, I believe, were from 2015. So
right.
It could be the fact that, because I know people said on that particular day there were no clouds, and it showed clouds. So it's possible we're mixing up the videos with the different dates and times.
Mm-hmm.
But no, the Tic Tac video is definitely something caught on very advanced radar systems that had just been installed in these F-18 fighter jets for the Navy.
Mm.
And it was that infrared sensors that were picking up these objects because they weren't visible with the naked eye. I think only on the sensors were they able to pick them up. But they definitely were structured craft. They were definitely flying in airspace that the fighter jets were. And they definitely moved at hypersonic speeds and were able to, from a start-stop, go instantaneous acceleration out of the viewfinder. Because the jets have... a gimbaled camera, if you will, and it's designed to track things like this. And when you watch the video, it's locked onto it, and then all of a sudden it shoots off to the left. That's because it moved so fast that the camera couldn't follow it,
right.
Couldn't track it.
Right.
But I mean, that camera is designed to follow objects moving all around the sky. So very, very interesting video, I think. The other thing is people say, oh, it's a very fuzzy. Well, if you're manipulating space-time, you're not going to get a sharp, crisp edge because you're probably halfway in this, you know, in this reference frame, and you're halfway in that other reference frame when mm-hmm. you're coming through. So I'm sure there's rationale for why it is what it is, but it's definitely nothing that we're flying. up in the sky, even though I've heard other people try to claim it's a secret Russian rocket. But
wow.
In my mind, it's definitely not that. It's something from someplace else.
You got a secret Russian rocket that can stand still in one place and then take off at 7,000 miles per hour from a standstill. I am now afraid of Russia.
Yeah, well, there's no heat signature. That's the thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, a rocket leaves a heat signature, and mm-hmm. there's no heat signature on these objects. They have no observable flight surfaces like a wing, a tail, an edge, and they have no discernible propulsion system. In other words, mm-hmm. there's nothing. You don't see a jet engine. You don't see the heat signature from a rocket. So how are they managing to do this, to fly in our skies without falling out like a rock?
Mm-hmm.
It's because they have this field propulsion technology, which is developed based on Einstein's general theory of relativity and this whole notion of space-time manipulation, and that's how they are able to zip around our skies unimpeded.
All right. Yeah, I always say that some of the explanations that the skeptic comes up with is more astounding, more unbelievable than alien visitation itself.
Right? Exactly.
Yeah. So this special unidentified Inside America's UFO investigation, that will have the last episode will have aired by the time this airs, okay? This will air the first Tuesday.
We've seen the first three, and there's three more to come.
Right, right. But, I mean, when our show airs, it'll be over. But I'm sure people can get it through, on demand, History Channel, whatever.
Yeah, it should be on all your cable stations, and also you can get it off the history.com website. You can play the different episodes off there as well.
All right. And one of the things that, have you spoken with, personally with, Luis Elizondo?
I have.
Okay. Has he imparted any knowledge, any wisdom that, we don't know about that you can share?
I don't think anything we don't know about. I mean, if you watch the show, I think, Lou is in private as he is in public. He was brought into the program. He knew nothing about the UFO subject when he took over the ATIP program back, mm-hmm. I think in 2007-08 time frame.
Mm-hmm.
He came to understand that it's definitely a real phenomenon and it's definitely some intelligence here flying around our skies. And he was totally baffled by the fact that nobody upstairs, when he tried to pass the information up, seemed to want to do anything about it. And that just floored him. So he felt strong enough about it that he resigned his position, his government position, and stepped out, ended up teaming up with Tom DeLong. That's a whole different story, but I teamed up with Tom DeLong, and they're trying to get this thing out to the public, and they're trying to get Congress to take action on it, to basically fund research into the subject and not make it in the black world, which it's probably been for all these years, but take it into the white world,
mm.
where we can all share in the information that's being gathered by this. So, he's definitely doing what he believes is right, and taking a few arrows for it, but that's you aren't going to change a paradigm without having people throw rocks at you.
Oh, no. That's right. I need to take one more minute just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. I'm David Twitchell. You're listening to We Are Not Alone, and we're speaking with the executive director for International MUFON, Mr. Jan Harzen. And we're talking about the fact that UFOs are real, so says the Pentagon and former United States Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense. And we just spoke with Mr. Paul Hellyer a couple months ago on this show. And I'm not going to say.
Minister of Defense.
Minister of Defense for Canada. Thank you, sir. I just, my brain just shut down temporarily. And he says they're real, and everybody says they're real, and so does Jan Harzen say they're real. Like I say, you got believers, you got skeptics, and you got witnesses. I'm a witness, and you're a witness. Am I right, Jan?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm a close encounter as a kid, which has got me involved in this whole thing.
Right. Did you have any, after that sighting, did you have any other sightings or experiences?
No, I had a number of paranormal-type events happen, but I didn't, well, many, many years later, like 25 years later, I was on a flight from New York back to Los Angeles, because I did work for IBM for a number of years and made quite a few trips to the East Coast. Mm-hmm. And as we were over Arizona, New Mexico area, it was scattered clouds, and I was looking out the window of the airliner, and I saw a big flying wing below us with circles on it. And that's something that Walt Anders saw and wrote a story about in the MUFON Journal back in the 70-80 time frame. But I only saw it for about 5 seconds or so before it went underneath the cloud and out of view. Mm. But it was kind of fascinating. It was just this big flying wing. That's all it was, a big wing, like a chevron.
Mm. What year was
it? White color. Oh, gosh, I'm going to have to guess, but I'm thinking it was probably about 95 or 98 in that time frame.
Well, we have the what they call a flying wing. Could it have been our technology?
Well, you know, it could be, it could be our technology. I don't know whose it was, but it was white and it had concentric circles on it, which I've never seen that before on a wing design. Now you're talking, of course, about the B-2 bomber, which is like a big chevron, but that's black.
I was going to say that's black. You know?
Yeah, it's completely black, and so I don't know. I don't know what it was. It was just flying in the sky, you know, just cruising along down below us.
Yeah,
I was looking out my window. I always sit at the window. I love looking out the window of airliners and looking for stuff. And that's the only thing I've ever seen. I've got like 3 million miles on airliners, and out of all that flight time, I've only seen that one item.
Yeah, but pilots see them virtually all the time, don't they?
We get a lot of reports from pilots. Yeah, they typically don't report it till after they've retired because there's this stigma that's been out there. But that's the other thing I really think is happening is a real sea change in this whole stigma about study of UFOs. So, you know, prior to the announcement in the New York Times, whenever we did an interview with someone in the press, they always felt compelled to have to put in the naysayer, you know, the debunker, if you will.
Sure.
So you would share your information with them, and they'd bring on someone else to kind of say why that probably wasn't the case.
Right.
What I've noticed since the article in 2017 is that the media is much more willing to take the story straight, face up. You know,
right.
If you say this happened, we're going to report it as news. You know,
right.
So I think that's fabulous. And the other thing too is I've seen a number of scientists and engineers and other professional folks coming out of the woodwork wanting to get involved with MUFON, which is exciting because they feel safe. It's safe now because it's being talked about by guys like Chris Mellon and Lou Elizondo and others who. Are basically American heroes in my mind.
Yeah.
So now they feel safe to come out and talk about it as well without fear of, you know, retribution or losing status at work or something like that. So I think we're in exciting times right now, David.
Well, Mr. Elizondo has stated, he stated in the first episode of Unidentified that disclosure is, and I quote this, disclosure is not an event, it's a process. And that process has begun.
Yes, so. I would agree with them wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
It's not just because of one TV show. It's not going to change.
No.
And different people on this planet, there's almost 8 billion of us, are at different points on that Kubler-Ross grieving chart when it comes to accepting that UFOs are real and they represent advanced technology in our skies that's not ours from somewhere else.
Mm.
But, I mean, we're in the process of shifting the curve over from the left side to the right side and getting people to acceptance and to hopefully embracing this and making some good out of it. And I think there's a lot of good to be had from a technological standpoint, advancing our propulsion systems to the point where we're not dependent on action-reaction rocketry and or motors and things like that, but some kind of field propulsion or unified field theory. I think it's going to have big benefits for all of us on this planet, not only in terms of pollution and climate change and other things, but just getting us from here to there. And then you've got the fact that these craft don't use traditional energy sources like we think of, like a fuel tank or a burn oil or combustion engine. There's a whole new energy source for us that we could probably tap into to light our cities and provide energy for remote areas of this world. That will allow everybody to enjoy the same basically the same benefits of everyone. You don't have to live in a big city anymore to have a great power grid. You can live out in the outback and have it. Communications, I mean, instantaneous communications across the planet, around the globe, around the universe. We know that these beings have telepathy. They use mind-to-mind communication, but they also seem to have instantaneous communication in terms of thought, the speed of thought, which seems to go above and beyond the speed of light. So however that works, I think we're going to get our arms wrapped around it, and we're going to figure it out. And that's going to be a huge advancement in communications technology for us. So propulsion, transportation, energy, communications, I mean, these are the big pillars of what's going on this planet today. And the good news is we won't destroy the planet getting there. It's going to actually help in the whole process of evolution of humankind. So I'm excited about it.
Yeah, but you know, the coal industry and the fossil fuel industry is not through selling us all their product yet. And so,
well, no, it's going to take a transition, and we're going to have to do it in a thoughtful way.
Yeah.
But it is happening. It is going to happen.
Yeah, sooner or later. But
sooner or later. Yeah, we're probably in a 50-year transition. I know people want it to be done, flip a switch, and we're there.
Yeah.
But the paradigm changes don't happen that quickly.
No.
They take, you know, decades, if not hundreds of years to happen. I mean, when Copernicus discovered that the sun was at the center of our solar system, you know, there were people burned at the stake because of that thought back in the day,
yeah,
in the 1500s. But in actuality, it took the Catholic Church 500 years to actually recognize the fact that the sun was the center of the universe, even though it was a foregone conclusion scientifically, could be proven. People refused to look through telescopes. They just did not want to. Don't bother me with the facts. My mind's made up, and that's just kind of how we think of a species. It's hard to shift a paradigm.
That's
hard.
Right. Yeah, this was, I was writing my second book at the time, so when would that have been? 2003. The polls said that 15%, I don't know what the polls would say today, but 15% of people asked the question, if it was stated emphatically that UFOs were real and there was proof positive evidence of it, would you believe it? They said, no, I wouldn't even believe it then.
Right.
Where's
right.
their thinking? You know, here it is right in front of you. No, I don't believe it.
Well, but that's true in a lot of things. I mean, it's just not UFOs. I mean, it's we as a human species, that's our greatest defense mechanism is denial, being able to deny facts in front of us. I mean, why do you have half the country lined up on the Fox News side and the other half of the country lined up on the CNN side in terms
right.
of political?
Right.
It's because they're seeing the same thing, but they're interpreting it differently.
That's it.
And they have their views, and they're not going to let go of their views. I mean, you're not going to spend your time changing anyone's view if they have it on any topic, let alone politics,
right.
religion, science, medicine. Oh, my gosh, medicine has been going through this catharsis for years. I remember as a child, you know, if you went to a chiropractor, you were going to the devil. Today, and you couldn't even get your insurance, health insurance to cover it.
Right.
Today, chiropractors are a general part of the whole process, and keeping your spine healthy and in shape and your nervous system, I mean, it's right up there with every other treatment that's been being given medically. But, you know, 40 years ago, that wasn't the case.
Right.
So it's the same thing with UFOs and this whole subject of who these beings are and why they're here and what they're doing. It's going to be another 40 or 50 year journey, I think, before we get to the bottom of it and get to the other side where we're living in a completely different, hopefully, I'll say utopia, but I mean, just a whole different mindset as a planet and as a species, and hopefully we'll make it there.
Well, we may never see that day, but we can take pride in the fact that we were part of the start of it, you know?
Yeah.
Yes. Pilgrims in it. But I like to think,
exactly.
Anyway, you know? So I would venture to say that the day of trying to convince the public that the UFO phenomenon is real is over, and the question is, where do we go from here, you know?
Good question. Well, I think where we go from here is that the Pandora's box has been opened. The genie is out and running around,
yeah.
And people now that they know that they're real, and that they represent advanced technology, and that they're using space-time manipulation to get here. I think the question they're going to have is, like, who are they, where are they from, and why are they here? And as a longtime speaker I heard many, many, many years ago, Robert Dean, I actually looked up the quote, and it's not from him, but it's anonymous, but the quote was, the more we look to find who they are, where they're from, and why they're here, the more we'll find who we are, where we're from, and why we're here. And I think there's a lot of that, you know, lost knowledge of where we've come from and our genesis and prodigy and the whole topic of that. I happen to be a Christian, and, you know, I believe the teachings of Jesus Christ, and that's what I adhere to, which basically is very simply to be connected to the source of the universe, which is God, and to be a servant to others. So that's the whole premise behind being a Christian. I think as I read a lot of the feedback that our experiencers are reporting to us and things that they've been told by these beings, it's a very, very similar nature. You know, stop destroying your planet, start treating each other better, you know, you know, grow up and join the galactic civilization. I mean, it's time for all of us to realize we're more than the shell we carry around as a body, and we're actually infinite beings that survive death. And I think people embrace that and start working that way, I think there's a bright future for all of us. Now, that's my two cents. People can believe whatever they want to believe, but I mean, that's where I'm coming from.
Well, a lot of people will say, how can you be a Christian and believe in the UFO phenomenon, that there are beings, intelligent beings on other planets? I think, you know, the greater the universe, the greater the God.
Exactly. That's what I say. God created a huge universe, and he filled it teeming with life, so get used to it.
Yeah.
And we're a small part of that.
So it boils down to how can you not believe in that and be a Christian, you know, and believe in a God? Because, you know, my God is a lot greater than that. Just one planet with... Or one species on it, one intelligent species.
Exactly. As Jodie Foster said in that movie, it would be a big waste of space if God created all that universe and didn't put anything else in it but us.
That's it. And if we're the best that God can do, sorry about that.
Well, I don't know about that.
I don't know about that.
That's yet to be determined, but yeah. Hopefully we can keep from killing ourselves.
Yeah. That's it. And I really think that that's what E.T.'s trying to do. Trying to say, you know, knock it off. You're killing yourself. You're killing the planet. You're killing each other. Knock it off. What do you think?
Well, Stanton Friedman used to say that, you know, our favorite pastime here is tribal warfare on this planet is tribal warfare. So if you're an extraterrestrial being and you're looking down on the planet and you see people killing each other right and left and all the wars that are going on the face of this planet and killing, I mean, why would you want to go down and introduce yourself to those people?
You wouldn't.
Yeah, you wouldn't, you know. I mean, first reaction that most farmers would have of a flying saucer landing in their farm field would probably take out their shotgun and shoot at it. So, I mean, we're not the kindest people at all times, and we live in a fear, kind of a fear, and that's, I think we need to lose our fear and start embracing the creation and everything that's here, because it's quite magnificent, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, the first balloon pilot, his name was Pilat. That's where we get pilot from.
Pilat, yeah, French, wasn't he?
Right. Pilat. And he came down in his balloon, his hot air balloon, and the farmers came after him with pitchforks because that's got to be the devil coming down from the sky.
The devil coming down on that balloon.
You know, exactly. And he's yelling out, no, you know, this is an invention of mine. And that's why the tradition of going up in a balloon, well, I don't know why I'm telling you this.
Well,
champagne, you know, because he'd carry champagne to offer them. You know?
That's still going on today. You can buy those balloon rides with the champagne.
Yeah. Well, that's where it came from. I want to take some champagne, and maybe if I offer these guys champagne to put their pitchforks down and not stab me, you know?
Exactly. So one of the things I would just close with is that, and this is kind of going back to the paradigm shift we're going through, is to imagine 20, 30 years from now or 50 years from now, when we have great interstellar travel and we're out, we, people from Earth, are out circling above a planet in another solar system or perhaps even another galaxy somewhere, mm-hmm. but a planet. And we're looking down on that planet. We see indigenous life down there that's, you know, less advanced than we are. And we go down and we interact with that life. We are now the aliens.
Right.
And I think that's what people need to grasp, is we are literally a hop, skip, and a jump away from that happening. Having the faster light technology, being able to go interstellar as a civilization, as a species. And now we're going to be out there interacting with other life on other planets, and we become the aliens. So we've lived in this bubble for several hundred years, thousands of years, whatever it is, where we think we're it, and that we're the top of the pyramid, there's nothing else. And these beings have impinged it upon us over time and shown us their craft and shown us themselves in some cases, which is freaked us out because our paradigm doesn't accept the fact that there's no one else besides us. but now we're doing that to other people, to other sentient life out there. So I think if you wrap your head around that and can understand that, then you can understand what's going on here.
Right. That's what we're trying to do. That's what the whole space program is, trying to go out and find other sentient life and actually trying to find a planet where we can go when we blow ourselves up. Because go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say, blow ourselves up and or something dramatic happens on this planet. We get hit by a huge asteroid or we, you know, the super volcano under the Yellowstone blows up and fills the air with so much soot that the Earth turns dark. You know, there's actually a lot of ways we could perish. And so getting out and doing space travel, much like Elon Musk talks about, is imperative for our survival as a species. I don't think people get that. I think they live in their day-to-day life thinking everything's going to be exactly the same tomorrow as it was yesterday. And for the most part, over 100 years, that might be true. Maybe over 1,000 years, that's true. But over tens of thousands of years, that hasn't been true. Our Earth is a very violent place.
Mm. So, yeah, and yet that's what we're trying to do, and yet we think it's just, you know, crazy to think that other planets, other species are doing the same darn thing. What do you think?
Yep. Yeah. Well, they've evolved just as we have, and maybe they did it 1,000 years or 1,000,000 years before us. So
that's right.
Just like in the last 50 to 100 years, we've, you know, if you think going back just even 50 years, and if you handed someone a cell phone today with all the gadgetry on it, they would think you were, you know, a warlord or something, you know, a witch.
Right.
But yet every kid in the world's running around with a phone that's got more compute power in it than I sold 40 years ago at IBM to customers paying millions of dollars. So just the advancement of technology on our planet has been phenomenal. I think our biggest challenge as a civilization is that our technological advancement has far outstripped our spiritual advancement as a species.
Yeah.
And we need to kind of bring them back into alignment. That would be my one comment, I think,
yeah,
if we had to make any changes.
Mr. Jan Harzen, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I hope we can do this again sometime. And
absolutely.
That URL again where people can go for the symposium?
They come to, they go to the MUFONsymposium.com, or they can go to just MUFON.com and click on the banner and learn all about. And if they can't come in person, I would encourage them to join by the live stream and get a year free of MUFON TV with it. So would love to have you there and come celebrate our 50th anniversary with us.
Sounds great. Thanks again for joining us, and have a good
one.
Bye-bye.
All right, you too. Bye now.
And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. This show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at whfr.fm's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, then Tuesday Forum. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, which is ufoimplications.com. That's ufoimplications.com. So please stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, for the best in alternative programming. I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 12 noon, when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. And until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
guys, it's DJ Starlight here, the host of Listen Between the Lines. Join me every Tuesday, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., where I will be playing all the alternative hits that might make you sing, might make you groove, but will definitely help you move through the week. Only on the station that is making waves, and that is WHFR.
.25% of community college students report food insecurity and are going to bed hungry. Shocking, right? A friend sitting next to you in class could be going hungry and you'll never know. The good news? HFC is here to help. The Hawk's Nest has non-perishable food items available for students experiencing hunger. And you can help too by donating non-perishable food items or money.